Chapter 7. A Matter of Thought. Seated on her mattress, Elaine finished the 100 strokes with her left hand, then put the hairbrush away in her small leather traveling case and pushed it back under the narrow bed. A dull ache rested behind her eyes from a day spent channeling, making Terangreal, too often trying to make Terangreal. Nynaeve, balanced atop their loose-jointed stool, had long since completed brushing her waist-length hair and was nearly done replaiting her braid loosely for sleep. Sweat made her face glisten. Even with the one window open, the small room was stifling. The moon hung fat in a star-filled black sky. Their stub of candle provided a fitful glow. Candles and oil lamp were in short supply in Salidar. No one got more than a scrap of light at night unless they had to work with pen and ink. The room truly was cramped, with little space to move around the two short beds. Most of what they owned was packed away in a pair of battered brass-bound chests. Accepted's dresses and cloaks they certainly had no need of now hung from pegs in the walls, where ragged holes in the crazed yellowing plaster showed the lathing beneath. A tiny table with a tilt was shoved between the beds, and a rickety washstand in the corner held a white pitcher and basin with an amazing number of chips between them. Even Accepted, who had their heads patted at every turn, were not indulged. A handful of bedraggled blue and white wildflowers, fooled by the weather into blooming late and not very well, stuck out of a yellow vase with a broken neck between a pair of brown pottery cups on the table. The only other spot of color was a green-striped song sparrow in a wicker cage. Elaine was nursing it for a broken wing. She had tried her small skill with healing on another bird, but songbirds at least were too small to survive the shock. No complaining, she told herself firmly. Aes Sedai lived a little better, novices and servants a little worse, and Gareth Bryn's soldiers slept on the ground most often. What can't be changed must be endured. Linny used to say that all the time. Well, Salidar held small enough comfort, and no luxury, and no coolness either. Pulling her shift away from her body, she blew down her front. We want to be there ahead of them, Nynaeve. You know how they go on if they have to wait. Not a breath of breeze stirred, and the parched air seemed to pull perspiration from every pore. There must be something that could be done about the weather. Of course, if there was, Seafolk Windfinders would probably already have done it, but she still might think of something, if only the Aes Sedai would give her time enough away from Terangreal. As Accepted, she supposedly could take her studies where she wanted, but if they thought I could eat and show them how to make Terangreal at the same time, I wouldn't have a minute to myself. At least there would be a break in that tomorrow. Shifting to her bed, Nynaeve frowned and fiddled with the Eidam bracelet on her wrist. She always insisted one of them wear it even when they slept, though it produced decidedly odd and unpleasant dreams. There was hardly need. The Eidam would hold Mogedion just as well hanging on a peg, and on top of that, she shared a truly tiny cubbyhole with Birgitta. Birgitta was as good a guard as could be, and besides, Mogedion almost wept any time Birgitta so much as frowned. She had the least reason to want Mogedion alive, the most to want her dead, which the woman knew very well. Tonight the bracelet would be less use than usual. Nynaeve, they'll be waiting! Nynaeve sniffed loudly. She did not do well being at anyone's beck and call, but she took one of two flattened stone rings from the table between the beds. Both too large for a finger, one was striped and flecked blue and brown, the other blue and red, and each was twisted, so it had only one edge. Unfastening the leather thong hanging around her neck, Nynaeve threaded the blue and brown ring alongside another, heavy and gold, Lan's signet. She touched the thick gold band tenderly before tucking both inside her shift. Elaine picked up the blue and red ring, frowning at it. The rings were Terangreal she had made in imitation of one now in Suan's possession, and despite their simple appearance, they were complex beyond belief. Sleeping with one next to your skin would take you into Telairanriod, the world of dreams, a reflection of the real world, perhaps of all worlds, Some Aes Sedai claimed that there were many worlds, as if all variations of the pattern had to exist, and that all those worlds together made up a still larger pattern. The important thing was that Tel-Iran-Riod reflected this world, and had properties that were extremely useful, especially since the tower knew nothing of entering it, so far as they could discover. Neither of these rings worked quite as well as the original, though they did work. Elaine was getting a little better at that. Of 4 attempts to produce a copy, only one had been a failure. A much better average than with the things she made from scratch. But what if one of her failures did worse than simply not work, or not work very well? Aes Sedai had been stilled studying Tel-Iran-Riod. Burned out, it was called, when it happened by accident. Yet it was just as final. Nynaeve did not think so, of course, but Nynaeve would not be satisfied till she healed somebody 3 days dead. Elaine turned the ring in her fingers. What it did was simple enough to understand, but the how still escaped her. How and why were the keys? With the rings, she thought the pattern of colors had as much to do with it as the shape. Anything other than the twisted ring did nothing, and the one that had turned out solid blue just gave you horrific nightmares. But she was not sure how to reproduce the original's red, blue, and brown. Yet the fine structure of her copies was the same, the way the tiniest bits of them, too small to see or even detect without the one power, were arranged. Why should the colors matter? There seemed to be one common thread in those tiny structures for Tel-Iran-Riod that required channeling to work, and another for those that simply made use of the power. Stumbling on that was what allowed her to even attempt to make original Tel-Iran-Riod. But there was so much she did not know, so much she was guessing at. "Are you going to sit there all night?" Nynaeve asked dryly, and Elaine gave a start. Setting one of the pottery cups back on the table, Nynaeve arranged herself on her bed, hands folded across her middle. "You were the one who mentioned not keeping them waiting. For myself, I don't mean to give those biddies an excuse to chew my tail feathers." Hastily, Elaine slipped the speckled ring, it was not really stone any more, though it had started out that way, onto a cord that she tied around her own neck. The second pottery cup also held a tincture of herbs that Nynaeve had prepared, slightly sweetened with honey to negate a bitter taste. Elaine drank about half, from past experience, enough to help her sleep even with a headache. Tonight was one of those nights she could not afford to dally. Stretching out on the cramped bed, she channeled briefly to extinguish the candle, then flapped her shift to produce a little cool. Well, a stir in the air, anyway. "I wish Egwene would get better. I am tired of the scraps Shiriam and the rest of them toss us. I want to know what is happening." She had touched on a hazardous topic, she realized. Egwene had been injured a month and a half ago in Cairion, on the day Moiraine and Lanfear died, the day Lan vanished. "The wise ones say she is getting better," Nynaeve murmured sleepily in the dark. For once she did not sound as if she had followed the path to Lan. "That's what Shiriam and her little circle say, and they have no reason to lie, even if they could." "Well, I wish I could look over Shiriam's shoulder tomorrow night." "As well wish—" Nynaeve stopped for a yawn. "As well wish the hall will choose you, Amarlin, while you're about it. You might have that one granted. By the time they choose anyone, we'll both be gray-haired enough for the job." Elaine opened her mouth to reply, but with the other woman's example it turned into a yawn, too. Nynaeve began to snore, not loudly, but with dogged persistence. Elaine let her eyes drift shut, but her thoughts tried to remain focused in spite of herself. The hall certainly was being dilatory, the sitters meeting for less than an hour some days, and often not at all. To talk to one, you would think she saw no urgency, though of course the sitters for the 6 Ajahs— there were no reds in Salidar, of course, did not tell other Aes Sedai what they discussed in session, much less an accepted. They certainly had cause for dispatch. If their intentions remained secret, their gathering surely no longer did. Elida and the tower would not ignore them forever. Beyond that, the White Cloaks were still only a few miles away in Amadicia, and rumors had begun of Dragonsworn right here in Altara. The light alone knew what Dragonsworn might get up to if Rand had no control over them. The Prophet was a good example, or rather a horrid one. Riots, homes and farms burned, people murdered for not showing enough fervor in support of the Dragon Reborn. Nynaeve's snoring sounded like cloth ripping, but in the distance. Another yawn cracked Elaine's jaws. She turned on her side and snuggled into the thin pillow. Reasons for dispatch. Samael sat in Ilion, and it was only a few hundred miles to the Ilianer border, far too close with one of the Forsaken. The light alone knew where the other Forsaken were, or what they were scheming. And Rand. They had to be concerned about Rand. He was not a danger, of course. He could never be that. But he was the key to everything. The world truly did bend itself around him now. She would bond him somehow. Min. She and the embassy had to be more than halfway to Camelund by now. No snows to slow them. Another month yet for them to arrive. Not that she was concerned about Min going to Rand. What was the girl thinking of? Min. Sleep slid over her, and she slid in to Telairan Riod, and found herself standing in the main street of silent, night-shrouded Salidar, with the moon gibbous overhead. She could see quite clearly, more so than moonlight alone would have allowed. There was always a sense of light in the world of dreams, from everywhere and nowhere, as if the darkness itself had some dark glow. But then dreams were like that, and this was a dream, if not any ordinary dream. The village here reflected the real Salidar, but in strange facsimile, more still than even night would make it. Every window was dark, and an air of emptiness hung heavily, as if no one occupied any of the buildings. Of course, no one did here. A nightbird's reedy cry was answered by another, then a third, and something made a faint rustling noise as it skittered away in the odd half-light. But the stables would be empty, and the picket lines outside the village, and the clearings where sheep and cattle had been gathered. Wild creatures there would be in plenty, but none domesticated. Details changed between one glance and the next. The thatch-roofed buildings remained the same, yet a water barrel would be in a slightly different place, or gone. A door that had stood open was closed. The more ephemeral a thing was in the real world, the more its position or condition might change, the less firm its reflection. Occasionally motion flickered in the dark street, someone appearing and vanishing after a few steps, or even floating across the ground as if flying. Many people's dreams could touch Telairan Riod, but only briefly, which was lucky for them. Another property of the world of dreams was that what happened to you here was still real when you woke. If you died here, you did not wake. A strange reflection. Only the heat was the same. Nynaeve stood there in an accepted's white dress with the banded hem, impatient beside Swan and Lyanna. She had the silver bracelet, too, though it would not work from here to the waking world. It still held Mogedion, but Nynaeve, out of her body, would not be feeling anything through it. Lyanna was regally slim, though in Elaine's opinion her barely opaque Domani gown of thin silk detracted from her elegance. The color kept shifting, too. That sort of thing happened until you learned what you were doing here. Swan was better. She wore a simple dress of blue silk, with a scooped neck just low enough to show the twisted ring on a necklace. On the other hand, lace trim sometimes appeared on the dress, and the necklace changed from a plain silver chain to elaborate pieces with rubies or fire drops or emeralds set in gold, with earrings to match, then back to the plain chain. That was the original ring hanging around Swan's neck. She appeared as solid as any of the buildings. To herself, Elaine looked just as solid, but she knew that to the others she seemed slightly misty, like Nynaeve and Lyanna. You almost thought you might see the moonlight through them. That was what using a copy did. She could sense the true source, but as she was, Saidar felt tenuous. If she tried to channel, that would be meager too. With the ring Swan wore, it would not be so, but that was the price of having secrets someone else knew and you did not dare have exposed. Swan trusted the original more than Elaine's copies, so she wore it, or sometimes Lyanna did, while Elaine and Nynaeve, who could use Saidar, made do. Where are they? Swan demanded. Her neckline swooped up and down. The dress was green now, the necklace a strand of fat moonstones. It's bad enough they want to stick an oar into my work and row as they please. Now they make me wait. I do not know why it upsets you for them to come along, Liana told her. You like watching them make mistakes. They do not know half of what they think they do. For a moment her gown slid dangerously close to transparency. A close torque of fat pearls appeared around her neck and vanished. She did not notice. She had even less experience here than Swan. I need some real sleep, Swan muttered. Bryn tries to run me breathless, but I have to wait on the pleasure of women who will spend half the night remembering how to walk. Not to mention being lumbered with these two. She frowned at Elaine and Nynaeve, then rolled her eyes skyward. Nynaeve gripped her braid firmly, a sure indication of temper working. For once, Elaine agreed with her wholeheartedly. It was more than difficult being a teacher with pupils who thought they knew more than they did, and were far more likely to call down the teacher than the teacher was to get away with calling them down. Of course, the others were far worse than Swan or Liana. Where were the others? Movement appeared up the street. Six women, surrounded by the glow of Saidar, who did not vanish. As usual, Shiriam and the rest of her council had dreamed themselves into their own bedchambers and walked out. Elaine was not sure how far they understood the attributes of Telairun Riod yet. In any case, they often insisted on doing things their own way, even when there was a better. Who could know better than an Aes Sedai? The six Aes Sedai truly were beginners in Telairun Riod, and their dresses changed every time Elaine looked at them. First, one was wearing the embroidered Aes Sedai shawl fringed in the color of her Aja, and with the white flame of Tar Valon a bold teardrop on the back. Then four were, then none. Sometimes it was a light traveling cloak, as to keep dust off, with the flame on back and left breast. Their ageless faces showed no signs of the heat, of course. Aes Sedai never did. And no sign they were aware of how their clothes were changing, either. They were as misty as Nynaeve or Liana. Shiriam and the others put more faith in dream Tarangreal that required channeling than in the rings. They just did not seem willing to believe that Telairun Riod had nothing to do with the One Power. At least Elaine could not tell which were using her copies. Somewhere about them, three would have a small disk of what had once been iron, scribed on both sides with a tight spiral and powered by a flow of spirit, the only one of the five powers that could be channeled in your sleep. Except here, anyway. The other three would be carrying small plaques, once amber, with a sleeping woman worked inside each. Even if she had all six Tarangreal in front of her, Elaine would not have been able to pick out the two originals. Those copies had gone very well. Just the same, it was still copying. As the Aes Sedai came down the dirt street together, she heard the tail end of their conversation, though she could not make head nor foot of it. "We'll scorn our choice, Carlinia," fiery-haired Shiriam was saying. "But they will scorn any choice we make. We might as well stay by our decision. You do not need me to list reasons again." Morvryn, a stout brown sister with gray-streaked hair, snorted. After all our work with the Hall, we would have a hard time changing their minds now. As long as no ruler scoffs, why should we care? Mirella said heatedly. The youngest of the six, not many years Aes Sedai, she sounded decidedly irritated. What ruler would dare? Anaya asked, much like a woman asking what child would dare track mud on her carpets. In any case, no king or queen knows enough of what passes among Aes Sedai to understand. Only the sisters' opinions need concern us, not theirs. What worries me, Carlinia replied coolly, is that if she is easily guided by us, she may be as easily guided by others. The pale, almost black-eyed white was always cool, some would say icy. Whatever they were talking about, it was nothing they wanted to discuss in front of Elaine or the others. They fell silent just before reaching them. Swan and Liana's reaction to the newcomers had been to turn their backs on each other sharply, as if they had been having words interrupted by the Aes Sedai's arrival. For Elaine's part, she quickly checked her dress. It was the proper banded white. She did not know how she felt about that, appearing in the right dress without thought. She would have wagered that Nynaeve had had to change her garb after appearing. But then Nynaeve was far more intrepid than she, struggling against limits that she herself acquiesced to. How could she ever manage to rule Andor? If her mother was dead. If. Shiriam, slightly plump and with high cheekbones, turned tilted green eyes on Swan and Lyanna. For a moment she wore a blue-fringed shawl. "If you two cannot learn to get along, I vow I'll send both of you to Tiana." It had the sound of something said often and no longer really meant.
"You worked together long enough," Baonin said in her heavy Tarraboner accent. A pretty gray with honey-colored hair and a multitude of braids, she had blue-gray eyes that constantly looked startled. Nothing surprised Baonin, though. She would not believe the sun came up in the morning until she saw for herself. Yet if one morning it did not, Elaine doubted that Baonin would turn a hair. It would just confirm that she'd been right to demand proof.
"You can and must work together again."
Baonin sounded as if she had said that so often that she hardly thought of it. All the Aes Sedai were long since used to Swan and Lyanna. They had begun handling them as they might have managed two girls who could not stop squabbling. Aes Sedai did have a tendency to see anyone who was not as a child, even these two, who once had been sisters.
"Send them to Tiana or don't," Mirella snapped. "But don't talk about it."
Elaine did not think the darkly beautiful woman was angry at Swan or Lyanna, perhaps not at anyone or anything in particular. She had a volatile temper remarkable even among greens. Her golden-yellow silk dress became high-necked, but with an oval cutout that exposed the tops of her breasts. She wore a peculiar necklace, too, like a wide silver collar supporting three small daggers, hilts nestling in her cleavage. A fourth dagger appeared and was gone so quickly it might have been imagination. She eyed Nynaeve up and down as if searching for fault.
"Are we going to the tower, or aren't we? If we are going to do this, we might as well accomplish something useful while we are about it."
Elaine knew why Mirella was angry now. When she and Nynaeve first came to Salidar, they had been meeting Egwene in Teleran Riod every 7 days to share what they had learned, which had not always been easy, since Egwene was always accompanied by at least one of the Aiel dreamwalkers she was studying with. Meeting without a wise one or two had taken some pains. In any case, all that ended when they reached Salidar. These six Aes Sedai of Shiriam's council had taken over the meetings, when they had had only the three original Turangrial and little more knowledge of Teleran Riod than how to reach it. That had been just when Egwene was injured, which left Aes Sedai facing wise ones, two sets of proud, resolute women, each suspicious of what the other wanted, neither willing to yield an inch or bow her neck a hair. Of course, Elaine did not know what went on at those meetings, but she had her own experiences to go by, and fragments dropped here and there by Shiriam and the others. Aes Sedai were sure they could learn anything once they knew there was something to be learned, usually required the respect due a queen, and always expected to be told what they wanted to know without delays or quibbles. They had apparently demanded answers about everything, from what Rand was planning to when Egwene would be well enough to return to the world of dreams, to whether it was possible to spy on people's dreams in Teleran Riod, or to enter the world of dreams physically, or bring someone into the dream against their will. They had even asked more than once whether it was possible to affect the real world by what you did in the dream, a pure impossibility they apparently doubted. Morvryn had read a little about Teleran Riod, enough to come up with plenty of questions, though Elaine suspected Swan supplied her share. She thought Swan was angling to attend the meetings herself, but the Aes Sedai seemed to think it concession enough to allow her to use the ring as an aid in her work with the eyes and ears. Aes Sedai interference in that work was what upset her. As for the Aiel, wise ones, the dreamwalkers at least, Elaine was aware from her own encounters, not only knew just about everything there was to know about the world of dreams, but looked on it almost as a private preserve. They did not like anyone coming there in ignorance, and had a rough way of dealing with what they saw as foolishness. Besides which, they were a close-mouthed lot, apparently fiercely loyal to Rand,
unwilling to say much more than that he was alive, or that Egwene would return to Tel Iron-Riod when she was well enough, and more than unwilling to answer questions they considered improper. Which last could mean that they did not believe the questioner knew enough yet to hear the answer, or that question or answer or both somehow violated their strange philosophy of honor and obligation. Elaine knew little more of Jietto than that it existed, and that it made for very peculiar, very touchy behavior. All in all, it was a recipe for disaster, and Elaine thought it very probably was served up fresh every 7 days, at least from the Aes Sedai point of view. Shiryam and the other five had required lessons every night in the beginning, but now there were only 2 times they did so. The night before meeting the Wise Ones, as if to hone their skills one last time before a contest, and the night after, usually tight-mouthed, as if to work out what had gone wrong and how to counter it. Mirella was probably already seething over tomorrow night's disaster. There surely would be one of some kind. Morvryn turned to Mirella and opened her mouth, but suddenly there was another woman among them. It took Elaine a moment to recognize Gera, one of the cooks, in those ageless features. Wearing a green-fringed shawl with the flame of Tar Valon on her back, and weighing no more than half what she really did, Gera raised an admonitory finger to the Aes Sedai and was gone. "So those are her dreams, are they?" Carlinia said coolly. Her snow-white silk dress grew sleeves that hung in points over her hands, and a high, tight neck under her chin. Someone should speak to her. "Leave over, Carlinia," Anaya chuckled. "Gera's a good cook. Let her have her dreams. I can see the attraction myself." Abruptly she became slimmer and taller. Her features did not really alter. She wore the same plain, motherly face as always. With a laugh she changed back. "Can't you see the fun in something for once, Carlinia?" Even Carlinia's sniff was cool. "Clearly," Morvryn said, "Gera saw us, but will she remember?" Her dark, steely eyes were thoughtful. Her dress, plain dark wool, held the steadiest among the six. Details shifted, but so subtly that Elaine could not really say what was different. "Of course she will," Nynaeve said acerbically. She had explained this before. Six Aes Sedai looked at her, eyebrows rising, and she moderated her voice. A little. She hated scrubbing pots, too. "If she remembers the dream, she will. But only as a dream." Morvryn frowned. She ran Baenin a close second in wanting proof. Nynaeve's long-suffering expression was going to get her in trouble, whatever her tone. Before Elaine could say anything to take the Aes Sedai's attention from Nynaeve, though, Lyanna spoke up with an expression close to a simper. "Don't you think we should go now?" Swan snorted contemptuously at the timidity, and Lyanna cut her eyes at her sharply. "Yes, you'll want to have as much time in the tower as possible," Swan said, diffident in turn, and Lyanna sniffed. They really did it very well. Shiryam and the others never suspected that Swan and Lyanna were not simply two stilled women clinging to a purpose that might keep them alive, clinging to the edge of what they had been, two women childishly at one another's throats all the time. The Aes Sedai should have remembered that Swan had had the reputation of a strong-willed and devious manipulator, and to a lesser extent so had Lyanna. Had they presented a unified front or shown their true faces, the six would have remembered, and looked hard at everything the pair said. But divided, spitting rancor in each other's face, all but groveling to the Aes Sedai and plainly not even aware of it. When one was reluctantly forced to agree with what the other said, it lent extra weight. When one objected on obviously frivolous grounds, so did that. Elaine knew they used the pretense to guide Shiryam and the others towards supporting Rand. She just wished she knew what else they used it for. "They're right," Nynaeve said firmly, giving Swan and Lyanna a disgusted look. Their pretense irked Nynaeve no end. Nynaeve would not have groveled for her life. "You should know by now that the longer you spend here, the less real rest you get. Sleep while you are in Tel Iron-Riod doesn't do as much good as ordinary sleep. Now remember that if you see anything out of the ordinary, you need to be careful." She truly did hate repeating herself. The fact showed clearly in her voice. But with these women, Elaine had to admit it was too often necessary. If only Nynaeve did not sound as if she were talking to dim-witted children.
When somebody dreams themselves into Tel-Ai-Run-Riod like Gera, but they're having a nightmare, sometimes the nightmare survives, and those are very dangerous. Avoid anything that looks unusual, and try to control your thoughts this time. What you think of here can become real. That Murdral that popped out of nowhere last time might have been a leftover nightmare, but I think one of you let her mind wander. You were talking about the Black Adja, if you'll remember, and discussing whether they were letting Shadow Spawn into the tower. As if that were not bad enough, she had to add, "You won't impress the wise ones tomorrow night if you drop a Murdral into the middle of everything."
Elaine winced. "Child," Anaya said gently, adjusting the blue-fringed shawl that was suddenly looped over her arms. "You have been doing very good work, but that doesn't excuse a peevish mouth."
"You have been given a number of privileges," Mirella said, not at all gently, "but you seem to forget that they are privileges."
Her frown should have been enough to make Nynaeve quake. Mirella had been increasingly hard on Nynaeve the past weeks. She had her shawl on, too. They all did. A bad sign.
Morvryn snorted bluntly. "When I was accepted, any girl who spoke to an Aes Sedai that way would have spent the next month scrubbing floors if she was due to be raised Aes Sedai the next day."
Elaine spoke up hurriedly, hoping she could forestall their own disaster. Nynaeve had put on what she probably thought was a conciliatory face, but she looked sulky and stubborn.
"I'm sure she didn't mean anything, Aes Sedai. We have been working very hard. Please forgive us."
Adding herself might help, since she had done nothing. It might also have them both scrubbing floors. At least it made Nynaeve look at her. And think, apparently, since her features smoothed into something that did seem appeasing and she made a curtsy and stared at the ground as though abashed. Maybe she really was.
Maybe.
Elaine rushed on as if Nynaeve had made a formal apology and had it accepted.
"I know you all do want to spend as much time as possible at the tower, so perhaps we shouldn't wait any longer? If you will all visualize Elida's study, just as you saw it last time?"
Elida was never called the Amyrlin in Salidar, and in the same way the Amyrlin's study in the White Tower had its name shifted.
"Everyone fix it in your minds so we all arrive together."
Anaya was the first to nod, but even Carlinia and Beonin let themselves be diverted. It was unclear whether the 10 of them moved or Tel-Ai-Run-Riod moved around them. It could have been either, from the little Elaine really understood. The world of dreams was almost infinitely malleable. One moment they were standing in the street in Salidar, the next in a large and ornate room. The Aes Sedai gave satisfied nods, still inexperienced enough to be pleased at anything that worked as they thought it should. As surely as Tel-Ai-Run-Riod reflected the waking world, this room reflected the power of the women who had occupied it over the last 3,000 years. The gilded stand lamps were unlit, but there was light in the odd way of Tel-Ai-Run-Riod and dreams. The tall fireplace was golden marble from Kandor, the floor polished redstone from the Mountains of Mist. The walls had been paneled a relatively short time ago, a mere 1,000 years, in pale wood, oddly striped and carved with marvelous beasts and birds that Elaine was sure had come straight out of the carver's imagination. Gleaming pearly stone framed tall arched windows that led onto the balcony overlooking the Amyrlin's private garden. That stone had been salvaged from a nameless city submerged in the Sea of Storms during the breaking of the world, and no one had ever found its like elsewhere. Each woman who used that room put her own mark on it, if only for the time of her possession, and Elida was no different. A heavy throne-like chair, an ivory flame of Tarvalin cresting the high back, stood behind a massive writing table, ornately carved in triple-linked rings. The tabletop was bare except for 3 boxes of Altaran lacquer work, each precisely the same distance from the next. A plain white vase stood atop a severe white plinth against one wall. The vase held roses, the number and color changing at every look, but always arranged with a harsh rigidity. Roses, at this time of year, in this weather. The one power had been wasted to make them grow. Elida had done the same when she was advisor to Elaine's mother. Above the fireplace hung a painting in the new style on stretched canvas of two men fighting among clouds, hurling lightning. One man had a face of fire, and the other was Rand. Elaine had been at Falma. The painting was not too far from the truth. A tear in the canvas across Rand's face, as though something heavy had been thrown at it, had been mended almost invisibly. Plainly, Elida wanted a constant reminder of the Dragon Reborn, and just as plainly, she was not happy having to look at it. "If you will excuse me," Lyanna said before all the satisfied nodding was done, "I must see if my people have received my messages." Every Aja except the White had a network of eyes and ears scattered across the nations, and so did a good many individual Aes Sedai, but Lyanna was rare, perhaps unique, in that as Keeper she had created a net in Tar Valon itself. No sooner had she spoken than she vanished. "She should not be wandering about alone here," Shiriam said in an exasperated voice. "Nynaeve, go after her. Stay with her." Nynaeve gave her braid a tug. "I don't think very often you do not," Mirella cut her off. "For once, do as you are told when you are told, accepted." Exchanging wry glances with Elaine, Nynaeve nodded, visibly suppressing a sigh, and disappeared. Elaine had little sympathy. Had Nynaeve not indulged her irritation back in Salidar, it might have been possible to explain that Lyanna could be anywhere in the city, that it would be almost impossible to find her, and that she had been venturing into Tel Irunriod alone for weeks. "Now to see what we can learn," Morvern said, but before anyone could move, Elida was behind the writing-table, glaring. An unyielding, stern-faced woman, handsome rather than beautiful, and dark of hair and eye, Elida wore a blood-red dress, with the striped stole of the Ammerlin's seat about her shoulders. "As I have foretold," she intoned, "the White Tower will be reunited under me." "Under me!" She pointed harshly to the floor. "Kneel and ask forgiveness of your sins." With that she was gone. Elaine let out a long breath and was gratified to realize she was not the only one. "A foretelling?" Bayonin's voice creased thoughtfully. She did not sound worried, but she might well have. Elida did have the foretelling, if fitfully. When the foretelling laid hold of a woman and she knew a thing would happen, it did. "A dream," Elaine said, and was surprised at how steady her voice was. "She's asleep and dreaming. No wonder if she dreams everything to her liking. Please, light, let it only be that." "Did you notice the stole?" Anaya asked no one in particular. "It had no blue stripe." The Ammerlin's stole was supposed to have one stripe for each of the 7 Ajas. "A dream," Shiriam said flatly. She sounded unafraid, but she had her blue-fringed shawl on again and was clutching it around her. So was Anaya. "Whether it is or not," Morvern said placidly, "we may as well do what we came for." Not much could frighten Morvern. The abrupt stir of activity at the Brown Sisters' words made it suddenly clear how still everyone had gone. She, Carlinia, and Anaya glided swiftly out to the anteroom, where the Keeper's work-table would be. That was Alviarin Fryden, under Elida. A White, strangely, though the Keeper always came from the Ammerlin's own Aja. Swan stared after them testily. She claimed there was often more to be learned from Alviarin's papers than from Elida's, for Alviarin sometimes seemed to know more than the woman she supposedly served, and twice Swan had found evidence that Alviarin had countermanded Elida's orders, apparently without repercussions. Not that she had told Elaine or Nynaeve what orders. There were definite limits to Swan's sharing. Shiriam, Bayonin, and Mirella gathered at Elida's desk, opened one of the lacquered boxes, and began rifling through the papers inside. Elida kept her recent correspondence and reports there. The box, worked in golden hawks fighting among white clouds in a blue sky, would suddenly shut again every time one of them let go of the lid, until they remembered to hold it open, and the papers themselves changed even as they were being read. Paper truly was ephemeral. Amid vexed tisks and annoyed sighs, the Aes Sedai persevered. "Here's a report from Danella," Mirella said, hastily scanning a page. Swan tried to join them. Danella, a young brown, had been part of the cabal that deposed her, but Bayonin gave her a sharp frown that sent her back to a corner, grumbling to herself. Bayonin had returned her attention to the box and its documents before Swan had taken three steps. The other two women never noticed. Mirella went right on talking. She says that Matin Stepanaeus accepts wholeheartedly. Roadron is still trying to take every side, while Aleandra and Tylin want more time to consider their answers. There's a note here in Elida's hand. Press them! She clicked her tongue as the report melted into air in her hand. It did not say about what, but there can be only two possibilities to take in those four. Matin Stepanaeus was king of Ilion, and Roadron of Mirundi, while Aleandra was queen of Gildan and Tylin of Altara. The subject had to be Rand or the Aes Sedai opposing Elida. "At least we know our emissaries still have as good a chance as Elida's," Shiriam said. Of course, Salidar had sent none to Matin Stepanaeus. Lord Brend of the Council of Nine, Samael, was the true power in Ilion. Elaine would have given a pretty penny to know what Elida proposed that Samael was willing to support, or at least let Matin Stepanaeus say that he would support. She was sure the Three Aes Sedai would have given as much, but they just went on snatching documents out of the lacquerwork box. "The arrest warrant for Moiraine, it is still in force," Bayonin said, shaking her head as the sheet in her hand suddenly turned to a fat sheaf. "She does not yet know Moiraine is dead." Grimacing at the pages, she let them fall. They scattered like leaves and melted into air before settling. "Elida still means to build herself a palace, too." "She would," Shiriam said dryly. Her hand jerked as she took in what appeared to be a short note. "Shemarin has run away. The accepted Shemarin." All three glanced at Elaine before turning back to the box, which they had to open again. None made any comment on what Shiriam had said. Elaine very nearly ground her teeth. She and Nynaeve had told them Elida was reducing Shemarin, a yellow sister, to the accepted, but of course they had not believed. An Aes Sedai could be made to do penance, she might be cast out, but she could not be demoted short of stilling. Only it seemed that Elida was doing exactly that, whatever Tower Law said. Maybe she was rewriting Tower Law. A number of things they had told these women had not really been believed. Such young women, accepted, could not know enough of the world to know what could be and what not. Young women were credulous, gullible. They might well see and believe what was not there at all. It was an effort not to stamp her foot. An accepted took what Aes Sedai wished to hand out and did not ask for what Aes Sedai did not choose to give, such as apologies. She kept her face smooth and her smoldering inside. Swan felt under no such restraints. Most of the time she did not. When the Aes Sedai were not looking at her, she bathed them all in a glower. Of course, if one of the three glanced in her direction, her face became meek acceptance in a twinkling. She was very practiced at that. "A lion survives by being a lion," she had once told Elaine, "and a mouse by being a mouse." Even so, Swan made a poor and reluctant mouse. Elaine thought she detected worry in Swan's eyes. This task had been Swan's since she proved to the Aes Sedai that she could use the ring safely. After secret lessons for her and Lyanna from Nynaeve and Elaine, true, and a prime source of information. It took time to re-establish contact with eyes and ears scattered across the nations and redirect their reports from the tower to Salidar. If Shiriam and the others meant to take this over, Swan might be less useful. In the history of the Tower, no network of agents had ever been run by any but a full sister, until Swan came to Salidar with her knowledge of the Ammerlin's eyes and ears, and the blue Ajahs that she had run before becoming Ammerlin. Bayonin and Carlinia were openly reluctant to depend on a woman who was no longer one of them, and the others were not far behind. Truth to tell, they were none of them comfortable around a woman who had been stilled. There really was nothing for Elaine to do, either. The Aes Sedai might call this a lesson, they might even think of it so, but she knew from past experience that if she tried to do any teaching without being asked, she would have her nose snapped off in short order. She was there to answer any questions they might have, and nothing more. She thought of a stool. it appeared, the legs carved in vines, and sat down to wait. A chair would have been more comfortable, but it might occasion comment. An accepted sitting too comfortably was often considered an accepted with not enough to do. After a moment, Swan made herself an almost identical stool. She gave Elaine a tight smile, and the Aes Sedai backs a scowl. The first time Elaine had visited this room in Tel Iron Riad, there had been a semicircle of such stools, a dozen or more, in front of the heavily carved table. Each visit since had seen fewer, and now none. She was sure that indicated something, though she could not imagine what. She was sure Swan thought so too, and very likely had puzzled out a reason, but if she had, she had not shared it with Elaine or Nynaeve. "The fighting in Shinar and Arafel is dying down," Shiriam murmured, half to herself. "But still nothing here to say why it began. Skirmishes only, yet bordermen do not fight one another. They have the blight." She was Saldaean, and Saldaea was one of the borderlands. "At least the blight is still quiet," Mirella said. "Almost too quiet. It cannot last. A good thing that Elida has plenty of eyes and ears through the borderlands." Swan managed to combine a wince with a glare at the Aes Sedai. Elaine did not think she had managed yet to make contact with any of her agents in the borderlands. They lay a long way from Salidar.
"I would feel better if the same could be said of Tarabon."
The page in Bayonin's hand grew longer and wider. She glanced at it, sniffed, and tossed it aside.
"The eyes and ears in Tarabon, they are still silent, all of them. The only word she has of Tarabon is rumors from Amadisia that Aes Sedai are involved in the war."
She shook her head at the absurdity of committing such rumors to paper. Aes Sedai did not involve themselves in civil wars, not openly enough to be detected, at any rate.
"And there are no more than a handful of confused reports from Arad Doman, it seems."
"We will know about Tarabon soon enough ourselves," Shiriam said soothingly. "A few more weeks." The search went on for hours. There was never any shortage of documents. The lacquered box never emptied. In fact, the stack inside sometimes increased with the removal of a paper. Of course, only the shortest held steady long enough to be read in full, but occasionally a letter or report that had already been scanned would come out of the box again. Long stretches passed in silence, yet some documents elicited comment. A few the Aes Sedai discussed. Swan began stringing a cat's cradle between her hands, apparently paying no attention at all. Elaine wished she could do the same, or better yet, read. A book appeared on the floor at her feet, The Travels of Jane Forstrider, before she made it go away. But women who were not Aes Sedai were granted more leeway than those training to be. Still, she learned a few things by listening. Aes Sedai involvement in Tarabon was not the only rumor that had found its way to Elida's writing table. Pedro Niles' ingathering of the White Cloaks was rumored to have, as its goal, everything from seizing the throne of Amadisia, which he certainly had no need of, to crushing the wars and anarchy in Tarabon and Arad Doman, to supporting Rand. Elaine would believe that when the sun rose in the west. There were reports of strange occurrences in Ilion and Kyrian. There might have been others, but those were the ones they saw. Villages taken by madness. Nightmares walking in daylight. Two-headed calves that talked. Shadow spawn appearing out of thin air. Shiriam and the other two passed over those lightly. The same sort of stories drifted to Salidar from parts of Altara and Murundi and across the river from Amadisia. The Aes Sedai dismissed them as hysteria among people learning of the Dragon Reborn. Elaine was not so sure. She had seen things they had not, for all their years and experience. Her mother was rumored to be raising an army in the west of Andor, under the ancient flag of Manetharan, of all things, as well as being held prisoner by Rand and fleeing to every nation imaginable, including the Borderlands and Amadisia, which last was purely unimaginable. Apparently the Tower believed none of it. Elaine wished she knew what to believe. She stopped fretting over where her mother really was when she heard Shiriam mention her name. Not speaking to her, reading hurriedly from a square sheet of paper that became a long parchment with three seals at the bottom. Elaine Trakand was to be located and returned to the White Tower at all costs. If there was any more bungling, those who failed would envy the Makura woman. That made Elaine shiver. On their way to Salidar, a woman named Rhonda Makura had come within an eyelash of sending her and Nynaeve back to the tower, like bundles of wash to the laundry. The ruling house of Andor, Shiriam read, was the key, which made as little sense. The key to what? None of the Three-Eyes Sedai so much as glanced in her direction. They just exchanged glances and went on with what they were doing. Perhaps they had forgotten her, but then again, perhaps not. Aes Sedai did what they did. If she was to be shielded from Elaida, that was an Aes Sedai decision, and if they decided for some reason to hand her to Elaida bound hand and foot, that was their choice too. "The pike does not ask the frog's permission before dining," as she remembered Linny saying. Elida's response to Rand's amnesty was evident in the condition of the report. Elaine could almost see her crumpling the sheet of paper in her fist, starting to rip it apart, then coldly smoothing it out and adding it to the box. Elida's rages were almost always cold. She had not written anything on that document, but scrawled biting words on another, enumerating the Aes Sedai in the tower, made clear she was almost ready to declare publicly that any who did not obey her order to return were traitors. Shiriam and the other two discussed the possibility calmly. However many sisters intended to obey, some would have far to travel. Some might not even have received the summons yet. In any case, such a decree would confirm to the world all the rumors of a divided tower. Elaida must be near panic to consider such a thing, or else maddened beyond reason. A sliver of cold slid down Elaine's backbone, and nothing to do with whether Elaida was fearful or engaged. 294 Aes Sedai in the tower supporting Elaida. Nearly one-third of all Aes Sedai, almost as many as had gathered in Salidar. It might be that the best that could be expected was for the rest to split down the middle as well. After a great rush in the beginning, the numbers coming into Salidar had slowed to a trickle. Perhaps the flow to the tower had dwindled as well. It could be hoped. For a time they did their searching in silence. Then Beonin exclaimed, "Elaida, she has sent emissaries to Randalthor!" Elaine leaped to her feet and barely held her tongue at a clutching gesture from Swan, spoiled a little by her failure to make the cat's cradle disappear first. Shiriam reached for the single sheet, but it became three before her hand touched it. "Where is she sending them?" she asked at the same time Mirel asked, "When did they leave Tar Valon?" Serenity hung on by its fingernails. "To Cairhien," Beonin said. "And I did not see when, if it was mentioned. But they certainly will go on to Camelin as soon as they discover where he is." Even so, that was good. It might take a month or more to travel from Cairhien to Camelin. The Salidar embassy would reach him first, surely. Elaine had a ragged map tucked away beneath her mattress back in Salidar, and every day she marked off how far she thought they might have traveled toward Camelin. The Grey Sister was not finished. "It seems that Elaida, she means to offer him support, and an escort to the tower." Shiriam's eyebrows rose. "That is preposterous," Mirella's olive cheeks darkened. "Elaida was red." An Amarlin was of all Ajas and none, yet no one could simply abandon where they came from. "That woman will do anything," Shiriam said. "He might find the White Tower's support attractive." "Perhaps we can send a message to Egwene through the Aiel women?" Mirella suggested in a doubtful tone. Swan gave a loud and very phony cough, but Elaine had had all she could stand. Warning Egwene was vital, of course. Elida's people would surely drag her back to the tower if they discovered her in Cairhien, and not to a pleasant reception. But the rest... "How can you think Rand would listen to anything Elida says? Do you think he does not know she was Red Aja and what that means? They aren't going to offer him support, and you know it. We have to warn him." There was a contradiction in that, and she knew it, but worry had hold of her tongue. If anything happened to Rand, she would die. "And how do you suggest that we do that, accepted?" Shiriam asked coolly. Elaine was afraid she must look like a fish with her mouth hanging open. She had not a clue what answer to give. She was saved suddenly by distant screaming, followed by wordless shouts from the anteroom. She was closest to the door, but she ran through with the others on her heels. The room was empty except for the keeper's writing table, with its piles of papers and stacks of scrolls and documents, and a row of chairs against one wall where Aes Sedai would sit while waiting to speak to Elida. Anaya, Morvryn, and Carlinia were gone, but one of the tall outer doors was still swinging shut. A woman's frantic screams rolled through the narrowing opening. Shiriam, Mirella, and Bayonin almost knocked Elaine down in their haste to reach the hall. They might have appeared misty, but they felt solid enough. "Be careful!" Elaine shouted. Yet there was really nothing to do but gather her skirts and follow as quickly as possible with Swan. They stepped into a scene from nightmare. Literally. Some 30 paces to their right, the tapestry-hung corridor suddenly widened into a stony cavern that seemed to stretch forever, lit in dim patches by the red glow of scattered fires and braziers. There were Trollocs everywhere, great manlike shapes, their all-too-human faces distorted by bestial muzzles and snouts and beaks, sporting horns or tusks or feathered crests. Those in the distance appeared more indistinct than the nearest, only half-formed, while the nearest were giants twice as tall as a man, even larger than any Trolloc, all clad in leather and black-spiked mail, howling and capering around cook-fires and cauldrons, racks and strange spiked frames and metal shapes. It really was a nightmare, though larger than any Elaine had heard of from Egwene or the Wise Ones. Once freed of the mind that created them, such things sometimes drifted through the world of dreams and sometimes latched onto a particular spot. Aiel dreamwalkers destroyed each as a matter of course whenever they found one, but they, and Egwene, had told her the best thing to do was avoid any she saw altogether. Unfortunately, Carlinia apparently had not listened when she and Nynaeve passed that on. The White Sister was bound and hanging by her ankles from a chain that disappeared into darkness overhead. To Elaine's eyes, the glow of Sidar still surrounded her, but Carlinia writhed frantically and screamed as she was slowly lowered head first toward a great, bubbling, black kettle of boiling oil. Even as Elaine ran into the corridor, Anaya and Morvryn halted at the border where hallway abruptly became cavern. For all of a heartbeat they halted, then suddenly their hazy forms seemed to elongate toward the boundary, like smoke drawn into a chimney. No sooner had they touched it than they were inside, Morvryn shouting as two Trollocs turned great iron wheels that stretched her out tighter and tighter, Anaya dangling by her wrists as Trollocs danced about her, flogging her with metal-tipped whips that tore long rents in her dress. "We must link," Shiriam said, and the glow surrounding her merged with that around Mirella and Bayonin. Even so, it did not come near the brightness of that around a single woman in the waking world, a woman who was not a misty dream. "No!" Elaine shouted urgently. "You mustn't accept it as real. You must treat it as—" She seized Shiriam's arm, but the flow of fire the three had woven, tenuous, even with them linked, touched the dividing line between dream and nightmare. The weave vanished there as if the nightmare had absorbed it, and in the same instant the three Aes Sedai became drawn out, mist caught in a wind. They had time only for startled yells before they touched the boundary and vanished. Shiriam reappeared inside, her head sticking up from a dark metal bell shape. Trollocs turned handles and jerked levers on the outside, and Shiriam's red hair flailed wildly as she shrieked in rising crescendos. Of the other two there was no sign, but Elaine thought she could hear more screaming in the distance, someone wailing, "No!" over and over, another shrieking for help. "Do you remember what we told you about dispelling nightmares?" Elaine asked. Eyes fixed on the scene in front of her, Swan nodded. "Deny its reality. Try to fix things in your mind as they would be without it." That had been Shiriam's mistake, all the Aes Sedai's mistake, probably. By trying to channel against the nightmare, they had accepted it as real, and that acceptance had pulled them into it as surely as walking in, leaving them helpless unless they remembered what they had forgotten, which they showed no signs of doing. The climbing shrieks augured into Elaine's ears. "The corridor," she muttered, trying to form in her head how it had been when she saw it last.
Think of the corridor the way you remember it.
I'm trying, girl, Swan growled. It isn't working.
Elaine sighed. Swan was right. Not a line of the scene before them so much as wavered. Shiriam's head was almost vibrating above the metal shroud that enclosed the rest of her. Morvryn's howls came in strained pants. Elaine almost thought she could hear the woman's joints being pulled apart. Carlinia's hair hanging below her was almost touching the roiling surface of the hot oil. Two women were not enough. The nightmare was too big.
"We need the others," she said. "Lyanna and Nynaeve? Girl, if we knew where to find them, Shiriam and the rest would be dead before—"
She trailed off, staring at Elaine.
"You don't mean Lyanna and Nynaeve, do you? You mean Shiriam and—"
Elaine only nodded. She was too frightened to speak.
"I don't think they can hear us from here, or see us. Those Trollocs haven't even glanced our way. That means we have to try from inside."
Elaine nodded again.
"Girl," Swan said in a toneless voice, "you have a lion's courage and maybe a fisherbird's sense."
With a heavy sigh, she added,
"But I don't see any other way myself."
Elaine agreed with her about everything except the courage. If she had not had her knees locked, she would have been in a heap on the floor tiles, patterned in all the colors of the Ajahs. She realized she had a sword in her hand, a great gleaming length of steel, absolutely useless, even had she known how to wield it. She let it fall, and it vanished before reaching the floor.
"Waiting isn't helping anything," she muttered.
Much longer, and the little courage she had managed to scrape together would surely evaporate. Together, she and Swan stepped toward the boundary. Elaine's foot touched that dividing line, and suddenly she felt herself being pulled in, sucked like water through a tube. One instant she was standing in the hallway staring at the horrors, the next she was lying on her belly on rough gray stone, wrists and ankles tightly tied in the small of her back, and the horrors were all around her. The caverns stretched endless in every direction. The tower corridor no longer seemed to exist. Screams filled the air, echoing from rocky walls and a ceiling dripping stalactites. A few paces from her a huge black cauldron stood steaming over a roaring fire. A boar-snouted Trolloc, complete with tusks, was tossing in lumps that seemed to be unidentifiable roots. A cookpot. Trollocs ate everything, including people. She thought of her hands and feet free, but the coarse rope still dug into her flesh. Even the pale shadow of Sidar had vanished. The true source no longer existed for her, not here. A nightmare in truth, and she was well and truly caught. Swan's voice cut through the screams in a pained moan.
"Shiriam, listen to me!"
The light alone knew what was being done to her. Elaine could not see any of the others, only hear them.
"This is a dream! Think how it should be!"
Elaine took it up.
"Shiriam, Anaya, everybody, listen to me. You must think of the corridor as it was, as it really is. This is only real as long as you believe it."
She set the image of the corridor in her head firmly, colored tiles in ordered rows and gilded stand lamps and brilliant woven tapestries. Nothing changed. The screams still echoed.
"You must think of the corridor. Hold it in your minds, and it will be real. You can defeat this if you try."
The Trolloc looked at her. It had a thick, sharp-pointed knife in its hand now.
"Shiriam, Anaya, you have to concentrate. Mirella, Beonin, concentrate on the corridor."
The Trolloc heaved her onto her side. She tried to wriggle away, but a massive knee held her in place effortlessly, while the thing began slicing at her clothes like a hunter skinning a deer carcass. Desperately she held on to the image of the hallway.
"Carlinia! Morvryn! For the love of the light, concentrate! Think of the corridor! The corridor! All of you! Think of it hard!"
Grunting something in a harsh language never meant for a human tongue, the Trolloc flipped her face down again and knelt on her, thick knees crushing her arms against her back.
"The corridor!" she screamed.
It tangled heavy fingers in her hair, yanked her head back. The corridor! Think of the corridor!
The Trolloc's blade touched her tight-stretched neck beneath her left ear.
The corridor! The corridor!
The blade began to slide. Suddenly she was staring at colored floor tiles under her nose. Clapping hands to her throat, marveling that they were free to move, she felt wetness and brought her fingers up to stare at them. Blood, but only a tiny smear. A shudder rippled through her. If that Trolloc had succeeded in cutting her throat, no healing could have cured that. Shuddering again, she pushed slowly to her feet. It was the tower hallway outside the Ammerlin's study, with no sign of Trollocs or caverns. Swan was there, looking a mass of bruises in a torn dress, and the eyes Sedai, misty forms of near ruin. Carlinia was in the best shape, and she stood wide-eyed and shaking, fingering dark hair that now ended frizzily a hand from her scalp. Shiriam and Anaya seemed to be weeping heaps of bloody rags. Mirella huddled in on herself, white-faced, naked, and covered with long red scratches and welts. Morvryn moaned every time she moved, and she moved unnaturally, as though her joints did not work properly anymore. Bayonin's dress appeared to have been clawed to shreds, and she was panting on her knees, more wide-eyed than ever, holding on to the wall to keep from falling over. Abruptly, Elaine realized that her own dress and shift were hanging from her shoulders, neatly sliced open down the front, a hunter skinning a deer carcass. She shivered so hard she almost fell. Repairing the garments was a simple matter of thought, but she was not sure how long it would take to repair her memories. "We must go back," Morvryn said, kneeling awkwardly between Shiriam and Anaya. Despite her stiffness and groans, she sounded as stolid as ever. "There is healing to be done, and none here can manage it as we are."
"Yes."
Carlinia touched her short hair again.
"Yes, it might be best if we returned to Salidar."
Her voice was a decidedly unsteady version of its normal iciness.
"I will stay a little while, if no one objects," Swan told them, or rather suggested, in that ill-fitting, humble voice.
Her dress was whole again, but the bruises remained. "I might learn a little more that's useful. All that's wrong with me are a few lumps, and I've had worse falling in a boat."
"You look more as if someone had dropped a boat on you," Morvryn told her. "But the choice is yours."
"I will stay too," Elaine said. "I can help Swan, and I wasn't hurt at all." She was aware of the nick on her throat every time she swallowed.
"I don't need any help," Swan said, at the same moment that Morvryn said in an even firmer tone, "You kept your head very well tonight, child. Don't spoil it now. You're coming with us."
Elaine nodded grumpily. Arguing would get her nowhere except into hot water. You would have thought the Brown sister was the teacher here, and Elaine the pupil. They probably thought she had stumbled into the nightmare the same way they did.
"Remember, you can step out of the dream straight into your own body. You do not have to go back to Salidar first."
There was no way of telling whether they heard her. Morvryn had turned away as soon as she nodded.
"Be easy, Shiriam," the stout woman said soothingly. "We will be back in Salidar in a few moments. Be easy, Anaya."
Shiriam at least had stopped crying, though she still moaned in pain.
"Carlinia, will you help Mirella? Are you ready, Bayonin?"
"Bayonin."
The Grey raised her head and stared at Morvryn a moment before nodding. The six-eyed Sedai vanished. With a last glance at Swan, Elaine was only a moment behind, but she did not go to Salidar. Someone would very likely be coming to heal the scrape on her neck, if they had noticed it, but for a little while they would be concerned with six-eyed Sedai, who would wake looking as if they had been pushed through some monstrous clockworks. Elaine had those few minutes, and another destination in mind. The grand hall in her mother's palace in Camelin did not appear around her with any ease. There was a feel of resistance before she stood on a red-and-white tiled floor beneath the great arched roof, between rows of massive white columns. Once more, light seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere. The huge windows overhead, depicting the white lion of Andor alternating with the earliest queens of the realm and scenes of great Andoran victories, were indistinct with the night outside. Immediately she saw the difference from what she knew that had made coming here difficult. On the dais at the end of the hall where the lion throne should have stood was instead a grandiose monstrosity made of dragons sparkling gold and red in gilt and enamel, with sunstones for their eyes. Her mother's throne had not been removed from the chamber. It stood on a kind of pedestal, behind and above the monstrous thing. Elaine walked slowly down the hall and climbed the white marble stairs to stare up at the gilded throne of Andorran queens. The white lion of Andor, picked out in moonstones against a field of rubies on the back, would have stood above her mother's head.
"What are you doing, Randall Thor?" she whispered harshly. "What do you think you are doing?"
She was terribly afraid that he was bungling matters without her there to guide him between the pitfalls. True, he had handled the Tyrans well enough, and apparently the Kyrianen, but her people were different, bluff and straightforward, with a dislike of being maneuvered or bullied. What had worked in Tyr or Kyrian could blow up in his face like an illuminator's display of fireworks. If only she could be with him. If only she could warn him about the Tower's embassy. Elida had to have some trick hidden to spring when he least expected it. Would he be sensible enough to see it? For that matter, she had no idea what the Salidar embassy's orders were. Despite Swan's efforts, most Aes Sedai in Salidar still seemed of two minds about Randall Thor. He was the dragon reborn, prophesied savior of humanity, but then again he was a man who could channel, doomed to madness, death, and destruction. "Take care of him, Min," she thought. "Reach him quickly and take care of him." A stab of jealousy hit her that Min would be there to do what she wanted to. She might have to share him, but she would have part of him all to herself. She would bond him as her warder, whatever it took. "It will be done." She stretched a hand up toward the lion throne to swear as queens had sworn since there was an Andor. The pedestal was too high for her to reach, but the intent should count. "It will be done." Time was running out. An Aes Sedai would be coming back in Salidar to wake her and heal the pitiful scratch on her neck. With a sigh, she stepped out of the dream. Dimondred moved out from behind the columns of the Grand Hall and looked from the two thrones to where the girl had vanished. Elaine Trakand, unless he missed his guess wildly, and using a minor Turangriant by the faint look of her, one made for training beginning students. He would have given much to know what was in her head, but her words and expression had been plain enough. She did not like what Althor was doing here, not in the least, and meant to do something about it. A determined young woman, he suspected. In any case, another thread in the tangle yanked, however feeble the pull turned out to be. "Let the Lord of Chaos rule," he told the thrones, though he still wished he knew why it had to be so, and opened a gateway to leave Telairun Riod.